Get an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99.
Oh.
That's an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99.
Oh.
So remember, get
wow!
for only at Pizza Pizza.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley.
Rise and shine.
Ziggy.
Can't even get out of bed in the morning. Just got to stop dressing like an 18-year-old and just pull those jeans down a little bit.
And Scotty Mac.
Vicious. Don't mess with him. And I think he's the kind of guy that doesn't mince his words. So he's got that sort of Conor McGregor swagger. You know, don't screw with him.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Got that Conor McGregor swagger. What the? Smart enough not to say that. Tina Belcher, what's up?
You're yelling. Hello, good morning, everybody. Feeling a little rebellious and rambunctious today, are we, Scott MacArthur?
Feeling spry. I don't think I was up as late as you. You had a Halloween gathering last night.
I went to a little shindig.
We're Tina Belcher of Bob's Burgers.
Yes, the very infamous, can we call it a twerking gif, I guess? If you don't know who Tina Belcher is, that's the best hint I can give you about what it looks like. I'm not usually a Halloween person. So when I do dress up, I like to keep it light. I like to keep it not gory because that blood and stuff is just a terror to get off you. But yeah, it was a pretty good night besides the gale force winds and aggressive rain. Like, did anyone's child blow away last night? Because Mary Poppins probably would have been an appropriate costume for someone's child yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know who went out in that. I mean, that's condo talk. Do people in condos give out? We were talking about this the other day. Do they give out candy?
Yes.
Because I was waiting. I didn't get any knocks.
I think that condos, their board would organize something. And be like, okay, which floors are going to participate or something along those
lines.
There
may be something in the party room if a unit or a building has one. I just think, though, too, with the number of young families who are living in condos now,
just
the price of housing in the city and the GTA is pretty restrictive for some people. The more people move in with families, the more kids there are, I would see it as a growing trend.
My condo is exceptionally unfriendly for the most part, I would say. Like, people in the elevators don't really talk to each other, which I'm absolutely fine with most days because, generally speaking, I don't really want to make elevator small talk. But sometimes it's super awkward and you're just look at someone and ask to yourself, can I get a what's up nod?
No. My building is worse than yours. My one elevator in my building, I take it up and there's always problems. And one time I'm in an elevator with a bunch of people. We make the stop on the floor and it just kept going and the door didn't open and no one said a word. They just kind of looked at me and like shrugged their shoulders and nothing. Like, the door wouldn't open on my floor. It stopped, gave it a shake and kept going. No one talks. No one says anything. No one cares.
What are they supposed to do?
They're supposed to like say something, say like, oh man, that sucks. Like, man, we have to get this. Say anything.
Tough bananas, Mike Zigamanis.
And that's just my bill. No one says anything to anyone.
Is it the responsibility of the other person,
like,
to launch into the social interaction with a what's up nod?
Or the person who's already on the elevator?
But if you want a what's up nod, offer one. And if they don't reciprocate, then they are socially delinquent. That's
it's head down. It's just head down. No one. I'm trying to look and.
But it's,
you know,
like, get
I'm
off, like, your phone. You have no service.
They're all on their phones.
But they have no service.
That's the best part. Okay, it's like, how bad is it that your phone doesn't even work and you have to look at it?
Listen, I always give the obligatory white person like smirk where you like don't really part your lips, but your cheeks kind of go up. You're like, and
but,
that's it.
Yeah, but how often does that lead to a conversation where you're like, oh, I'm not going to lie, I've been head down guy before.
We know. Hoodie up, straw strings tight.
Yeah.
Full astronaut.
Looking unimpressed.
I mean, how about people on your floor? Do you know the people on your floor?
I know a couple of them, yeah. I do.
Because I finally ran into someone on my floor. We came out of our door at the same time, walked to the elevator, and not one word or look was said.
That's weird. That's super weird. What if you need help? Here's the thing. Your neighbors need to be your allies. That's the couple people you do have to talk to in your building are your neighbors. What if something goes down?
And it's not like I don't have anything. Like, one thing happened to me was the door didn't open in the elevator. Another thing that happened to me is I had my guitar and my electric guitar in my hand, walking to the elevator, going down to storage. I needed to put the extra cases in.
Are you a traveling band?
But they had an opportunity to say something, and they said nothing.
What are they supposed to say? When's your album drop?
Is that a Gibson?
Like,
no, but you know what I mean?
Are those Gibsons?
Like, it's a way into a conversation. It's not like I'm just walking down with my hands in my...
Are you offended that they're not talking to you? Is that the problem
I think people on your floor, you should be cordial. It's a little hello in the morning.
Then you need to take the initiative, Michael. You can't expect someone to be like, oh, sweet guitars, those strings tight.
You got like a $6,000 espresso machine in your unit. Invite people in for
it's
coffee.
Only for
Java.
Make one of those latte things with
You're telling me I asked my next door neighbor if they want coffee to come over for coffee.
I would absolutely not do that. No. Say hi to them in the elevator, you psycho. Yeah.
It was, but you want to know what?
Out into the hall together, and we're like, rah, and then have the audacity to be like, and then they didn't even talk to me. It's like,
but I'm looking the whole way down, and then I've got the things I'm looking over.
Well, maybe because you're making direct aggressive eye contact.
No, I'm giving like the little look. I'm waiting for anything, like a look in my direction, and I would have dove in.
All right.
And I didn't know what to say. Maybe they were a little loud a week ago, and the concierge may have said something because I let them know. They were really loud up late.
You ride?
Okay, so when you do that,
snitch.
Do you go and knock on their door first and ask them to tone it down? And if they don't, you get the authorities involved? Or do you go right to the authorities?
Well, this is the thing. I don't know what protocol is for this. All I know, it was late night.
So you went right
I wasn't
down.
Sleeping. I did go down and tell concierge, hey, there's a problem on the floor. I didn't give them the number. I just said it's a little loud. Can something be done? Now, does the concierge go up to the room and tell them this other condo is upset? Or do they just go in and try to tell them to quit it?
I don't know. My concierge would probably keep my name on the DL because I talk to him and say hi. Probably if you ignore people, they're going to be like, yeah, the guy in 607.
Such a former NHLer.
I talk to the concierge downstairs. Everyone I'm friends with. Everyone. Because they're the only ones that talk to anybody in the building. And they're really friendly.
What, by the way, because we have to deal with this now that we're into November and Halloween is over. So holiday gifts for the door people, for the concierge, is that a thing?
I'm going gifts.
For all of them. I've got like four.
I've got gifts for three of them.
It's impossible for me to get everyone gifts because there's so many different guys. There's a few of them that I'll probably get something for, including my superintendent, who always helps me out a lot, who confirmed, you guys weren't here at the time, but there was a dead body in my building, and I was on the elevator. Oh, my God. So I was on the elevator.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, it stops at, I think it was like the seventh floor or something. They're like, paramedics, firefighters, ma'am, can you get off the elevator? And there was a woman with her dog, and we're both like, oh, sure, no problem. Like, we get off, even though we're going down to the lobby. And all of a sudden, there's a condo down the hall. Yeah. There's a condo down the hall, and the lights are flickering, and the door is open, and there's a kerfuffle. And I kind of smell something, and I'm like, what is that? And I look at the woman beside me and then down at her dog, and I'm like, oh, you have a disgusting dog, don't you? And then I was like, wait, I would have smelled it before in the elevator. It's not that. And I look up, and then there's like a body rolled out on a gurney. And so I checked with my superintendent. I'm like, was there like a dead person or something? And he's like, oh, we can't really say. I'm like, I just need to know if the building's murdery or not. He's like, it wasn't a murder. I was like, oh, so it was a body. I think natural causes, RIP, and I'm sorry for their loss. But I was just like, this is crazy.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how long the corpse was there. Had to have been at least a week and a half.
Yeah, I don't know if you feel better for knowing that or not knowing that. Because had you been out at that time,
I would never been any the wiser. Anyway, you know who's dead? The Leafs.
No, the Leafs are alive,
They're
baby.
Dead. They're dead.
And did you see all the Halloween costumes? I mean,
I did. Austin Matthews as Freddie Mercury was good.
And Mitch Marner was Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yep. That was a good one. I'm surprised no one went, at least that I saw, as William Nylander in Paris. That would have been my move. Cornrows, Harry Potter-esque glasses, and just running around with prosciutto all the time.
Was it Kerfoot or Barry who was the man in the yellow hat from Curious George? Who, by the way, is a weirdo.
It must have been Kerfoot because I think Barry was Versace.
Okay. Because there was a four-guy pick of Freddie Mercury, Austin, Fred, Mitch Marner from Scooby-Doo, and then the man in the yellow hat from Curious George was also...
What's the other one I was thinking of? I thought it was Dick Tracy.
There was like a Dick Tracy craze in the early 90s when that movie came out with Warren Beatty, and Madonna was in it as, I think, Breathless Mahoney. And we were kids, like all the toys.
Yeah.
And then like a year later,
nothing. It's like Warren Beatty never even played the role.
It fell off it didn't have lasting power like G.I. Joe or, you know, any of those.
That's true. Because who wants to really wear a zoot suit? Like, that's not cool.
How about Max Domi?
The Joker?
Yeah. That was really
cool. That's a pretty popular one.
A lot of people wore the Joker this year. DeAndre Jordan, Carl Anthony Towns was the Joker. Also, I believe Bradley Beal was the Joker. A lot of NBA players played that character too.
But that's a pro makeup artist that's doing that. He's not at home going to Walmart and buying a kit and doing that in his bathroom.
No, because that would be just a setup for an Instagram versus reality or a Pinterest fail post. If I feel like almost any guy took that on, no offense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could do anything close to that.
You could by accident, but not if you were intending to look like that. You could screw it up enough that you would come away looking like a horror show.
It's a professional job. There's no way any guy did that, because that's just like, I mean... Unless you have a makeup kit at home and you're doing that stuff.
And you dabble, that's fine. Yeah, RuPaul's Drag Race is very, very, very popular show.
It's mainstream.
Who dressed up as Lego guy? I feel like it was an NBA player.
It was.
Was it Riddick? No.
Yeah, J.J. Riddick.
It was Riddick?
Yeah, Riddick. Okay.
Yeah, that was like...
Because he's
that's
little.
Awesome.
He's so tiny too.
We know what you. We now know what you were doing last night.
Yeah.
Ziggy was on his phone.
On Instagram.
Oh, this guy is this guy, and this guy's dressed up like this.
I like Halloween. I think the costumes are great.
Did you go and see your nieces and nephews?
No.
Boo, did you go?
there would have been Instagram stories.
Shame. Where's the Game of Thrones the ringing bell and throwing fruits at them?
What age is too old to go for Halloween?
I went this year, so I can't answer this. You mean trick-or-treating specifically?
Trick-or-treating, of course. Oh, my gosh.
I think once you've had a growth spurt is when you get eyed at the door. Like, when the adult answering the door to give you candy looks at you eye to eye, like at eye level, it's probably a little much.
Here, I have a different theory. I think that you have to stop trick-or-treating when you stop giving a crap about your costume. Like, if a kid's coming up to me and he's 13 or 14 or she's 13 or 14 and they are like all out and I'm like, oh my God, Medusa, that's sick. Are those real snakes? Candy. If someone comes up to me in a leather jacket, they're like, oh, I'm Danny Zuko. You're like, get out. Yeah, no, the thumb. Yeah, so, yeah, gotta go.
So if it's just the one out of the plastic bag thing where you just throw it on and it's the one piece costume, that's a no-no?
I'll allow it.
Okay.
I also think if you're like a teenage boy and you go to the door and you're like, trick or treat.
So,
I mean, that's pretty much. And what are you dressed as wearing that hoodie?
So
I'm on the radio.
So your rule is if your voice ain't cracking, this ain't it.
So if your voice drops, then that's it.
Can I have a Mars bar?
Yeah, if your voice drops.
That's it.
Yeah.
So 13 is the age.
No, I'm not giving a definitive age.
There has to be an age where it's
so
like,
now you're IDing people at your apartment building after you don't talk to anyone all year. Yeah, you're going to make a lot of friends, buddy.
Those of you too young to have an ID, show me your ID. Go out trick-or-treating next year. Let us know
how it goes.
I mean, you'll be in your 40th year. It'll
39.
Should play well. Well, you will be 39 in your 40th year. That's how that works. Okay, so big games tomorrow night. I actually, and you can disagree with me on this if you want. We do live in a democracy. I think the Raptors-Bucks is a bigger game than the Leafs-Flyers. Yeah. Just because of the Eastern Conference final rematch last year and the fact that Giannis was not good for Milwaukee in the back half of that series, they win the first two games at home. The Raptors win game three in overtime at Scotiabank Arena. Kawhi is hobbling off the court, not 100%, but the Raptors never looked back off of that win in game three.
Well, was it him not playing well, or was it just the Raptors were just so good?
Well, it'd be a little bit of both, but Giannis didn't show.
It was a little bit of both, and the problem is when your game is not as diverse as it probably should be, when you're already being talked about as a top five player in the league, and this is the thing that bothers me about these rankings, because Giannis physically is a freak. His name is literally Freak, and that's in large part because a lot of people are too lazy to try and figure out how to actually properly pronounce his last name, and that's fine. We've all agreed as a consensus, like, oh, the Greek Freak, we know who we're talking about. But when you're talked about as this prolific player, and you have the stature, and you have the athleticism, and you have the motor, but you don't have a jumper, that becomes difficult in the postseason, because what people can do is they give you the Ben Simmons treatment. They're like, shoot it then. And then you see what happened, and you have to make up that value somewhere else. And someone who's playing really great over the postseason, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka as well, if you're not going to be getting rebounds and they're going to be gobbling up the boards, then it really can limit your impact. And the Raptors' defense was exceptional throughout the postseason, so it also limited fast break opportunities, which is where Giannis thrives in the open court.
I think that's a situation where you can look at a team, and that's a big step for you. When you can shut down a guy like that, that's when I think the Raptors, that you can see the strides you're taking, and you can really see a team go to that next level, is when you can shut down that guy that good. When you can really handle a top player, that's when it shows me something where a team's really matured and they've improved and they've done more than what they did the year before.
Well, and there was a Kawhi factor last year. I circled back to Giannis and the narratives that we either speak or begin to write about certain players. And there is no doubt that Giannis is one of the best basketball players today in the NBA. That is inarguable.
Well, he's fun to watch.
But if Milwaukee gets into the second or the third round of the Eastern Conference playoffs again this year, and Giannis has any kind of a similar experience to the one he had in the series with the Raptors last year, now we're talking about back-to-back, well, we can pick the word, meltdowns, whatever.
People better bring that same energy that they bring to LeBron James, to Giannis. He doesn't get to be exempt then. Listen, he had to put this franchise, he had to put this city on his back, and it's a lot of stress for a younger player. And Milwaukee hadn't been in that situation before, so it was new for everyone. So I think that there is a little bit of leeway, a little bit of, okay, now you've had your learning curve. What's going to happen next? What have you learned? How are you going to apply it? And what have you done in the offseason to make sure that this doesn't happen again if your team's in the same position?
And the matter here is strictly pride and athletic competition, because Giannis is getting paid regardless.
Regardless.
I mean, this is not about whether or not he maxes out when he hits free agency or if he signs with Milwaukee in advance of free agency a year and a half from now. He's getting the max.
He's going to get paid, and it might be by the Raptors. John Hollinger was on Good Show yesterday, and he wrote a piece for The Athletic just talking about the chances that Giannis ends up in different locations around the NBA 2 years from now. And one of the points that Hollinger made, which was kind of interesting, is that there's not necessarily a theory around the league or a feeling around the league that the Toronto Raptors are a destination for high-profile free agents unless they're international players. There's more appeal for international players than American players, and Hollinger pointed out that Giannis signing with Toronto would fall in line with that.
Well, there's that aspect of it, and then there's the Masai Ujiri aspect of it and the long-standing relationship that he has with Giannis and his family. And when these rumors that annually seem to pop up around the end of the NBA season, oh, the Washington Wizards may offer Masai $10 million a year to come and run their franchise, or is he going to go to the Knicks, the rumor of a year and a half, 2 years ago, I think it was. The value, aside from the fact that he is, if not the most prolific basketball executive in the game today, he certainly is one of the most. The value of Masai Ujiri is the ability to recruit someone like Giannis. And that would give the Raptors I mean, I don't know how much of an increase in percentage shot of landing the guy, but it certainly would increase the likelihood of it happening as opposed to if Masai moved on and somebody replaced him.
And I feel like Masai, and I don't know if you want to compare Dubas to him, but you got to remember there was a time here in Toronto where you couldn't get free agents. And I don't know what it was like for the Leafs on the hockey side. I'm not sure what it was like on the Raptors side in getting these guys. But it, like you said, it almost seems like Masai can go out in free agency or in trades and guys want to come here. And Dubas has done the same thing.
Well, the American, it truly is. I understand what you're saying, but it truly is apples and oranges because you have predominantly Americans playing in the NBA.
And they don't want to come here, generally speaking.
Right.
We've had a number of players defect from the Toronto Raptors, but usually what happens, to your point, is that when players do get traded, they do come around. Because it's the unknown. All they know is, oh, it's bad weather in Toronto. And you're like, yeah, okay, American cities have cold weather too. New York, Chicago, Milwaukee, for example. Okay, so what else, right? So players do enjoy being here once they're here. And then we've seen players decide that they're going to stay. That's more of what's happened in Toronto as opposed to with the Leafs. And honestly, aside from John Tavares, like, who wants to play for Toronto that's from Toronto?
It's definitely changed.
Okay.
Guys do want to come here now. The Tavares signing was big, obviously, because I didn't even see that coming. But if you think about what this organization's been like the last 10, 12 years, there have been times where I can tell you right now, guys just didn't want to play here. And we've had Brian Burke on the show, and he had a hard time getting guys. It's just one of those things where, and we talk about culture and branding with an organization, if you can't put a winner if you can't put a winning team together, no, at the end of the day, no one really wants to come. And the whole thing with the weather, that's what I don't get. Guys go to Chicago, guys go to Boston in respect to NBA players. I don't understand why Toronto's any different.
Well, you would know this too. I mean, if the Leafs aren't winning, Mike, and you come home, I mean, you're a local guy. You've got people you haven't seen since the seventh grade DMing you on Facebook saying, hey, remember we were really good friends when we were 12. Can I have a pair of tickets to tonight's game? You know, that sort of thing. It's just, it's all the attention. It's all
it's
the
a
demand.
Hassle.
It's a hassle.
Well, I remember coming in and playing my first game against Toronto and my phone was ringing. We were at the Westin downtown. It would not stop ringing all day. And we go in for, you know, you kind of go to the rink, you have your pregame skate in the morning, then you go and eat, then you come back to the room and you have your nap, right? So you're in your room for 3-4 hours during the day, and it literally had to go down and tell them no more calls to my room.
How scummy.
It was so bad with the phone calls for tickets.
Why are people so scummy? That's the worst. Like, this is just a PSA, public service announcement. And it's not just for tickets if you know an NHLer, because surprise, a lot of us do. We know hockey players that made it to the show. Don't hit someone up when you haven't spoken to them in like a year, 2 years, and ask for something, whether it's to borrow my recipe for my mom's cookies or whether it's for tickets to an NHL game, stop being a scrud.
My favorite, and I, again, radio talk show host, not a former NHLer, so it's not the same level, but my favorite always is, hey, texting, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm bringing so-and-so to the Blue Jays game a week Friday. Like, is there any chance that you can get in early to watch batting practice? Which is their way of saying, do you have any contacts that could get me an on-field pass to watch batting practice? But they're just, but they couch it by asking, do you know what time the gates open so that maybe I could see some batting practice? Like, it's like, just come out and ask.
So I can say no faster.
Ask, please.
But you help them though, because you're a nice person.
Well, because I'm bloody philanthropic, yeah.
But you feel bad, right? But I've dealt with that every single day for tickets.
I know. It's
for
annoying.
Come out to pregame skate, and it's after a while. But you want to know what? You dream about playing. I dreamt about playing the NHL my whole life, and I always said if I ever get to that point where people are calling me for tickets, I would never turn anybody down. No one in my family, extended friends, some guys I've talked to once in high school, back in 95 would literally reach out and say,
well, you feel bad for bullying.
The audacity. You feel bad for stealing their girlfriend.
I'm a Kingston Frontenac.
Yeah, this guy couldn't go trick-or-treating by the age of 9 when his voice dropped. Trick-or-treat. It's like, bro, you're dressed as a pumpkin. Get the hell out of here.
I did hit it a little bit early, maybe. You mean it's bad? So pretty much we're saying if someone has a mustache, they don't get their candy.
Yeah. Mike, well, tell your dad he can't come trick-or-treating anymore. It's creeping me out.
We will talk a little more about Leafs Flyers tomorrow night in Philadelphia, a game you can hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let's just make a toilet noise and flush the excuses. Philly got thumped 7-1 by Pittsburgh 2 nights ago. They are in New Jersey tonight. So when the Leafs land in Philadelphia later this afternoon and spend the evening in the city of brotherly love, they will be waiting for the Flyers, who will be tomorrow night on a back-to-back with travel. We know the Leafs have been through that a bunch of times already this year. No excuses for the Maple Leafs tomorrow night. Hugh Burrell, six-pack, next.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Just got so excited about the Vegas game. Anything Vegas, I get very excited about. Well, Arizona is close to Nevada. And the 49ers record is perfect, but the effort wasn't last night, but it was good enough. The Niners defense gave up over 350 yards, but that's okay. Jimmy G was on his game.
Emmanuel Sanders is left. He's going to go in jet sweep motion. Kittle is tight left as a wide tight end. They bunch the formation right. Garoppolo looking for Sanders. They take it away. He lobs one down the sideline of the end zone. It is caught! For a touchdown by Dante Pettis! Touchdown! San Francisco!
Yeah, 4 touchdown passes for Garoppolo as the Niners move to 8-0 with a 28-25 victory. Jimmy G's now 16-2 as a starter in the NFL.
What, like it's hard?
Yeah. Anybody can do that.
He was really good last night. One of his better games of the season.
Defense wasn't.
Well, and this is what I wonder. Kyler Murray, rookie. Russell Wilson is the next quarterback the 49ers face a week Monday in Santa Clara. And are there things the Seahawks will pull from what the Cardinals did that worked? Quick hitches, quick passes out into the flat, because you've got to mitigate the 49ers defensive line, which is just Tecmo Bowl level amazing. Are the things the Cardinals did things the Seahawks will turn to, and can the 49ers adjust? The 49ers schedule ramps up significantly, but obviously 8-0 is a pretty good way to pad for any potential losses.
Helped along a lot by that questionable timeout by Cliff Kingsbury at the end of the first half. The situation was the 49ers had it, 4th and goal from inside the 1-yard line. The Cardinals stopped them, but hang on a second. They'd actually called a timeout, gave the Niners another shot at it, and they punched it in.
I've heard of freezing the opposing kicker.
Yeah.
I've never heard of freezing your own defense.
Yeah, it backfired. Whatever he did, it didn't work.
2.
Odell Beckham Jr. came to the aid of his embattled quarterback, Baker Mayfield, yesterday, saying if the team was winning, then nobody would have a problem with the way Mayfield is. But Stephen A. Smith wasn't letting Mayfield off the hook.
You are the face of the franchise. You're the quarterback. You're supposed to be a leader. And you've shown no leadership qualities whatsoever in this very, very frustrating season. How much better do you think it's going to get, particularly if you struggle? Now, if you're winning, you can get away with some of these things. You're losing.
Ashley, winning solves everything, right?
It absolutely does. And Odell Beckham's point is true, and it's a valid point, but you know the game. You know the way it's played. And quite frankly, Odell Beckham Jr. has been, I know that he's been critiqued a lot by a lot of pundits, but he's actually been on the receiving end of the superstar treatment when he's been on a Giants team that struggled. And still people talk him up because he's good. They blame Eli Manning. Greatness solves everything. So maybe people wouldn't have a problem with Baker Mayfield if they were winning. Quite frankly, though, in this situation, I feel like he would still be polarizing. Maybe that he wouldn't be called out on it to his face, or maybe he wouldn't feel like his back's up against the wall as much as he does now. And I like the fact that Baker Mayfield is unapologetic for his attitude and his behavior. But yeah, you win and you do whatever you want.
Well, here's the thing, Sky, before I get to you. It's like no one is doubting the talent, the natural talent that Baker Mayfield has. He's got a lot of it. Whether that translates into greatness in the NFL, I don't know. That's still a long way down the road. I think it's his abrasive pushback personality where everything has to be something with this guy that has reporters kind of pushing back on him a little.
Well, I think two things are going to happen. The Browns are going to have to address the offensive line, and then to use a turn of phrase, if Baker can't take the heat, he's got to get away from the kitchens. Freddie Kitchens will be one and done. They'll hire a better head coach. They'll fix the offensive line, and this Browns team will be double-digit victories next year.
It's almost like he wants the stardom. He wants all that, but he doesn't want to do anything to get it. He's one of those guys, one of those players, and that just, it's never going to just happen to you.
Yeah, he's a very me versus everybody.
Me versus the world, baby.
We've said this before. If the Browns get good, and I believe they will next year, he will be really annoying to non-Browns fans.
See, I disagree. I don't think this guy's ever going to be much in the NFL. I think he's going to be okay, but I think people were really overestimating him coming out of college. That's just, what do I know?
Three.
By the way, Browns in Denver on Sunday. The Leafs are in Philadelphia tomorrow. Last night, late night, just two games in Nashville. The Flames fell behind 4-1, but then Matthew Tkachuk tied it 5-5 with 40 seconds to go, and then in overtime.
Slides the left wing side to Lindholm. Lindholm walks into the slot and shoots, and now Tkachuk scores! Matthew Tkachuk ties the game late in the third period, and he wins it with no time left in overtime. The Flames tricked the Predators into thinking they had this game wrapped up and then treat themselves to an incredible come-from-behind win on Halloween night.
6-5 Flames of file snaps off the Preds' four-game winning streak. Ziggy, thoughts on this comeback by the Flames?
I mean, if you wanted to turn it off after the first 10 minutes, the Flames looked brutal, and then you give up two more shorthanded goals. It's just one of those things where nothing's gone right for this team. And if you thought they were going to win 6-5 in Nashville, that Nashville team is rolling. I played for Laviolette. He always seems to get his teams going, especially off the start. Your big guys have to get it done for you. Tkachuk came through here at the end in overtime. I mean, me and Sky were talking that goal through the legs. Who was it? Milano on Columbus?
Yeah,
Sammy maybe Milano. A little bit different, but anytime you can score a goal like that, it's Barkov did it last year. But yeah, Tkachuk, and you got to get Monahan. You got to get Goudreau going.
Well, they put that line back together last night.
They did put him up. But yeah, the giveaway by Lindholm in it, a giveaway by Goudreau. Just one of those things where if these guys can't get this team going, I don't like their chances right now.
Four.
In Las Vegas, the Habs also battled back. They were down 4-2 at one point, but they forced overtime, and then
Petrie racing into the offensive end. The Golden Knights were Stone and Pacioretty and Theodore to start it out. Down low, Domi! St. Clair score! Broke through him, and Domi buries it! And it didn't take the Canadians long. 27 seconds into overtime to cap the comeback. Down two in the third period, rallying to tie it, and Max Domi wins it in overtime, 5-4.
That was Domi's fourth goal of the season. He is on pace for 76 points this year, which would be four more than last year, which was his best so far in his career. So what about Montreal has turned Max Domi into this offensive powerhouse?
He loves the spotlight. You saw him in Phoenix. Things didn't work out from there. I've played there for a couple years. It's a sleeper town. You get 8,000-9,000 people a night. All of a sudden, he comes to Montreal last year, turns it on. He's playing well this year. But now that we're talking about these guys like Max Domi and Tkachuk, wouldn't they look good in the blue and white? Ugh. Like a guy like that, like one of those guys.
Do you hate Hugh?
A young player is like, oh, wouldn't he look great in the Leafs?
Yeah, everybody's coming to the Habs. Here's the thing. So I like your point that he likes the spotlight. And if you compare it to what we were talking about earlier with one Baker Mayfield, the difference between the two of them is that it's almost as though Baker acts like he's okay with being the villain, but he's not. He wants to be beloved. He wants to be boisterous, a big personality, but he wants people to like him. Max, I think he doesn't care if people like him. I think as long as his teammates like him, he's good to go. He can be the villain outwardly, and that might be the biggest difference between people that want the spotlight and have big personalities. You have to be okay with the hate.
Yeah, he revels in it.
I don't have a thought on that, Hugh, but I just think Connor McDavid would look good in a Leafs uniform.
Moving along.
Five.
Raptors get back at it tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a free agent next offseason. Maybe he'd look good in the blue and white. I don't know. Or maybe the Raptors red, or the Raptors black, or the Raptors purple, or the Raptors gold and white.
White pinstripe.
Yes, I know. The Athletic senior NBA columnist John Hollinger joined Good Show yesterday and told Ben and JD that the Raptors wouldn't be the only team interested in the Greek freak, but Toronto might have the inside track.
I do think there's a little more connecting tissue in here with Giannis and the Raptors. I mean, Toronto's always seen itself as this more of a destination point for international players than American players, and this definitely would fall in line with that. You know, I think until he wins a title in Milwaukee, this question will always be out there of what he's going to do when his contract expires, or until he signs an extension with them.
Ashley, percentage-wise. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I think there's
for the
probably around a 20% chance that he comes to Toronto. Listen, it's going to come down to if the Bucks have a plan in place that they can lay out for him and show him that they're serious about continuing to build, because he wants to win. So if they don't have some plans in place and some building blocks, then he's going to move on. I actually think that there's a chance that he goes somewhere else first, before he becomes a Raptor or wherever he goes in free agency in 2 years down the line. Because if Milwaukee doesn't have a plan, I think that he goes the way of Paul George, like how we told the Pacers, listen, I'm not re-signing with you, so if you need something back from me, you got to get it now. So I actually think that if he decides he doesn't want to stay in Milwaukee, he could get traded to a contender for pieces, then go sign his big deal somewhere else.
Well, Ziggy, Leaf fans are crossing their fingers in hopes that the Greek freak comes to Toronto.
Six.
The Sixers, Joel Embiid, and the T-Wolves, Karl Anthony Towns, have been suspended 2 games each for Wednesday night's brawl in Philly. The unpaid vacation will cost Embiid $379,000 and Towns $376,000. Now, Kevin Durant and Draymond Green didn't fight, we don't think, but they did argue during and after a loss to the Clippers last season. Durant was asked if that had anything to do with him bolting the Warriors for the Nets.
A little bit, yeah, for sure.
You want to expand on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, your teammate talked to you that way, you think about it a bit, but, you know, we talked about it, but definitely, for sure, I'm not going to lie about it.
How much do you guys think this actually weighed in on his decision?
I think it did. KD always in his feelings. He's on Twitter, burner accounts. Listen, I'm kind of into the fact that he's been on this Man of the People tour since he's been rehabbing from his injury.
He's got nothing else to do.
He's engaging with a ton of people on Twitter. He's doing a number of interviews, and he's being completely straightforward. In this instance, if you say to your friend, your teammate, hey, we're good, we're squashing the beef, and then you go on a show, though, and say, it absolutely is still on my mind, I think that's a little sideways.
He's sensitive and soft. And just, I mean,
that's 10-ply.
Those don't have to be the same thing. So sensitive and soft don't have to be the same thing.
Well, here's the thing, though. Okay, so you're weighing in the fact that your teammate wasn't nice to you and bolted. You're leaving the team because your teammate said something nasty.
Said it was one of the reasons it weighed into the decision.
I said sensitive and soft. I didn't say they're the same thing. He's both.
I called him 10-ply. 10-ply.
If I'm getting $200 million either way, and I think I'm gonna be happier somewhere else, then I'll go somewhere else.
But what if his new teammates is mean to him?
Well, he doesn't know that
Where does he go now?
Well, the difference is that was Steph Curry's team. That was Draymond Green's team. That was Sean Livingston's team. Andre Iguodala, go down the list. Klay Thompson. He was, as much as he was the star of that team, he was down the pecking order in people.
Strange to say, but he was.
It is.
Yeah.
And so now where he goes, the difference to you is in Brooklyn, I don't like this guy.
Let's go.
Move on.
He's driving the bus.
Ashley is my life coach, and so she suggested to me about 10 minutes before the show started that I would not share my feelings on the month of November on the program this morning, because happy, happy, joy, joy. But now that Halloween is out of the way, what's next? The sports world changes a little bit as baseball celebrates the World Series and now gets into the offseason. And oh, by the way, somebody we know is going to market.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So I done throwed out a take on Twitter that November is the worst month of the year. Eric S. writes me, February would like a word with you, Scotty. Anna says that's January. Justin says February, especially after the Super Bowl.
What? What's wrong with January, Anna?
It's, well, January, at least the days are getting longer. That's the only redeemable thing. Here's November, very quickly. I've been encouraged to do this by a couple of listeners. Oh, so
here we go.
Dreary, 5 degrees, drizzly rain every day, getting cold, days still getting shorter. And then the days do get legit shorter on the back end because the clocks go back next weekend. Still far enough away from the holidays that we're not quite in the spirit.
Counterpoint.
Is it this weekend? Like, it's like, wow.
Okay, I have a counterpoint. It's crisp. It's fall.
No, it's crisp in October.
I let you have the stage. Thank you. This is the rebuttal. My time. I'm on Congress. My time, sir.
You have the gavel.
It's crisp. You can wear a scarf. You can have a nice new boot collection that you build up in terms of fashion. You can go to a pub and order some kind of shepherd's pie or stout pie and not feel gross about it because it's just heavy enough for the weather, but you're not into Christmas holiday season yet where you've been binge eating so you feel gross, you know?
I'm with February is the worst. The worst. I'm sorry.
You like Valentine's Day?
The days are getting longer, though.
Who cares?
By then. We're all fed up with winter. You can sneak off south if you've had enough of the cold. It's just, no. I don't like November. And
well,
I'm
November
sticking to it.
November doesn't like you.
Well, good.
Good.
Because I didn't invite it. It just showed up, and it kicked my door down this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm a cranky pants about it.
Get your poppies, everybody. Get your poppy game up.
Yeah,
that's
we've
what
got
I will
them.
Say. Of course we do. Thanks, show.
Respect.
I went out and got poppies for everyone on the show, said not me, said show.
The one thing that makes me happy on this first morning of November, aside from the fact that it was payday today, the 49ers won last night. They are 8-0 after a 28-25 win over Arizona last night. Charles Davis on the 49ers, great first half of the season, but could the Seattle Seahawks, San Francisco's next opponent, have taken away some things that Arizona did offensively that seemed to work? Because those two teams will meet in a big game a week from Monday. We'll discuss that so much more with Charles Davis next.
Get an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get... Wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley.
You're so self-promotional, and everyone enjoys that.
Tofu Guy.
Oh, God, did you have a fake bird?
I had tofurkey yesterday. It was actually not too bad. It's about the size of a football, and it doesn't look great.
Oh, boy, I got to tell you, that sounds awful.
And Scotty Mac.
Does everybody in the world have to like you?
Yes! Yes! Everybody has to like me. I must be liked.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
How come I get eye rolls around this room whenever I bring up the 49ers? Am I not allowed to be happy?
It's just, they just bother me now. The more you talk about them, they bother me more and more.
I think that's just him projecting that he actually might have a personal problem with you as a human.
You want to talk about it, Mike?
No one likes a bragger.
Yeah, since we have our therapist here,
It's true, but no one likes a bragger. And I know that you've been in football hell for quite a little while, so it's nice that your team is finally coming to fruition. But eventually you might learn that when you're just like a winner and you're used to it, that's just not what you do. You don't gloat. You don't post about it every second of every day. I will say I was actively rooting for the Cardinals last night while I was watching the game just because I knew it would make you mad that a terrible team beat your team.
But I don't know how bad they are.
They're just not great.
Well, they're not.
They're fine.
They're the fourth best of that four-team division.
Sure.
There's no question. But Kyler Murray's an impressive young quarterback. And
for sure, but they shouldn't have lost. If they lost that game, you would have been like, what are we doing?
Exactly. Yeah, it would have been. I would have walked in and said it was the trap game. They smoked Carolina at home. Yeah, they got Seattle coming up next week. Short week in Arizona. It was a trap game. But they won.
They did.
Doesn't matter how ugly it may have been from a defensive perspective, they won the game. Charles Davis knows, like Herm Edwards, you play to win the game. And here is our good friend Charles Davis, analyst from Fox Sports. That's the whole point, right, Charles? I mean, nobody's going to look back in January or if the 49ers make the Super Bowl and play in early February and say, hey, remember week 9 in Arizona where that game was just a little too close? The whole point is you win the games. That's it.
Yeah, it's very true. And even if you had lost the game and somehow made the Super Bowl, nobody would have looked back and said, boy, they shouldn't be there because they lost that game. So that's the beauty of an NFL season, is that you can absorb some bumps and bruises along the way if you're good enough. And, you know, you can look back through history and see teams just get destroyed and somehow get it together. Anybody remember the Colts Super Bowl win when they beat the Bears about 3-4 weeks before the end of the regular season? The Colts played Jacksonville. And I think Jacksonville ran for like 377 yards. It was just an unbelievable amount of yardage. And everybody said, well, there's no way Indianapolis can get there. The run defense is horrible. Bob Sanders, their safety, who solidified the run defense, was hurt at the time. And somehow Sanders comes back, solidifies the defense. Manning, of course, leads the offense. They find a way to win it. So it kind of goes back and forth. But I was enjoying listening to you guys talk about this thing. And Ashley, like, I was kind of hoping they would win just so I could get to laugh at you a little bit. And I'm like, what did I wander into this morning? I'm a little terrified here. But the bottom line is this. Arizona is better than I would have projected them in the regular in the preseason. There's no question in my mind. That team is much better than I ever would have thought. So I give them credit. They still find ways to do dumb things that prevent them from having a chance to win, like calling timeouts before stopping people on fourth down, like challenging plays that obviously shouldn't be challenged, like not challenging a play that should have been challenged. We can go right on down the line. That stuff could get evened out over time. They're not going to be a threat this year, but they're on a better track than I would have projected in preseason. San Francisco, of course, that's a big deal. I just hope that George Kittle's leg, that he doesn't wake up this morning and go, oh, my God, because that was a heck of a hit he took and played through last night.
Right. Yeah. Oh, a lot to get to off of what you said there. I think the Rams will be the worst team in the division 2 or 3 years from now, just given all the draft capital that they've traded away, and with Arizona on the up and up, Niners and Seahawks are good. I want to talk about Garoppolo quickly. Because if I'm a 49ers fan, and oh, by the way, Charles, I am, just wanted to remind you of that. I've loved the run game. I've loved the defense this year. I've wondered about Garoppolo. Well, you know what? The Niners didn't play particularly well defensively last night, didn't run the ball like we're accustomed to. Jimmy G put that team on his back last night, 300-plus yards, 4 touchdowns. That's a big deal to see that they can win that way too when they need to.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And it's interesting you bring that up, because I just had this discussion with someone else in the league probably 2 days ago. Like, what is it that we really need to see out of San Francisco? Because, you know, many people are still wanting to not give them credit. You know, they still want to go, well, let's just see. Well, it all centered around what you talked about. They have not needed Jimmy Garoppolo to be undefeated prior to last night. It's like even the Rams game. You know, when they didn't run the ball particularly well, not what you're used to getting, the Rams, well, the 49ers defense, they strangled the Rams so badly that the Rams threw for 78 yards. It couldn't move the football. So you still didn't need Garoppolo. But as you pointed out last night, that was a big deal. They needed him for a variety of reasons. Two phases of the game weren't working as well as normal for them. Could he beat someone where he had become the principal guy, the feature point? And we've come a long way since the preseason when he had that 0.0 rating. Remember that in the preseason? Everybody was making every Animal House joke unknown to person, you know? Mr. Blutarski, 0.0 grade point average. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And he's come that far. And a lot of that is just the continued rehabilitation of his knee, the continued confidence of being able to play. And we always keep forgetting this is a guy who's been around for a while but doesn't have nearly as many starts as you might think just because you've heard his name for a long time. So I agree with you totally. Last night, him being able to be the feature guy on offense, being able to throw the four touchdown passes, being able to throw the team into a victory, yeah, that was a big deal for them.
Well, and you need to have those games, too, where you grind it out, no matter how the game script goes, right? Because you don't want to go through a season where you have little to no adversity. And I mean, the obvious comparison is the 16-0 Patriots who didn't end up getting it done. But there's obviously different nuances for every single season. But something we were talking about earlier, and Scott, I don't mean to steal your words, but when the Seahawks are watching how the Cardinals are playing against the 49ers, is there anything that they can learn about that? Or was this just an off game for the 49ers defense? We talk about it was a win or it was a loss by the other team. The distinction about who actually made the mistakes that led to the result. So I don't know how you feel about the way things went between Arizona's offense versus San Francisco's defense that get the credit or, you know, have to face the music.
Yeah, I think there's some credit to be given, obviously, to Arizona improving. But you always look at this, and let's face it, the Thursday night controversy of football in the NFL always comes back to one thing. Who goes on the road on a short week on a Thursday night, and how often are you truly successful? And I know San Francisco to Arizona is not a daunting trip, but it's still a short week. You know, I heard you mention trap game before, which is funny to mention, you know, that San Francisco after the recent years is looking at a trap game, but essentially that's what it is. And let's face it, we're all still trying to get Arizona figured out. And I think most people like me in preseason, you would have marked Arizona down for 2-3 wins max. Okay. I mean, it's just kind of the way you looked at bad roster, unproven head coach, brand new quarterback. Will this system work on offense? They're playing better all the way around. And Chandler Jones on defense is a heck of an equalizer when you're trying to throw the, football, he makes it difficult trying to get things done. But all in all, if you're San Francisco, you walk out of there feeling very good about yourself, even though as a coaching staff, you've got a great opportunity to really jump on your guys because it's easier to jump on when you've won and you say, hey, see, if we don't come prepared to play, this can happen to us against anyone, blah, 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 all the cliches that apply. So it works out very well, I think, for San Francisco. And if you're Seattle, you're looking at it and you're saying, yeah, I might learn a few things about it. But the bottom line is San Francisco is a lot tougher football team mentally than maybe people might have thought as well.
Charles Davis is an NFL analyst for Fox Sports. He's with us on Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now I want to move to the game with Patriots and Ravens this weekend.
Yeah.
One thing I want to talk about, obviously, is Lamar Jackson, only quarterback to rush for 500 and pass for 1,600 yards through the first 7 weeks. Can he take down this Patriots defense by himself?
Not by himself. No one does it by themselves, but he can do so many different things that maybe other things can pop free. And what I mean by that is he will be the focal point. He has to be. He has to be what the Patriots lock in on, identify, and do. And I'm eager to see if they're going to change what the Patriots do defensively. Because here's the thing. When a quarterback can run as well as Lamar Jackson can run, it doesn't just hurt you in your regular run game. It hurts you in your pass coverage. Because most times when you play a quarterback that mobile and that willing and eager to take off with the football, you really don't want to be in man coverage. You want to be in zone coverage. Because in zone, your eyes are back towards the quarterback, back towards the line of scrimmage, and you can see him take off and go, and you can react quicker. If you're in man, you oftentimes have your back turned to the line of scrimmage because you're chasing receivers. And it's funny sometimes, you guys have watched games, right, where you look and you see a guy covering a receiver, he's thundering downfield with the receiver, yeah, and the quarterback's like 5 yards behind him with the football running, and he never knows he's there because he's locked in on the receiver as he's supposed to be, his man coverage. The Patriots play about, you know, we're into such analytics, they're about 65% of the time close to that in man coverage. Will that change, and will they go, and will they try and cut that down in order to look back at Lamar Jackson? And if they do, does that hurt them overall as a defense? Because you really are loath to change anything when you're giving up 7.6 points per game.
Yeah.
I mean, you just go, I think this
we're
is working
a,
pretty
okay
well.
Things.
I don't know if we want to change it. But at the same time, if you don't make that change or you don't acknowledge it, all of a sudden, that 7.6 goes out the window because Lamar Jackson has now run for 150 and has opened up passing lanes. So, yeah, he'll be the focal point. He can't do it by himself, but he can put the idea in the Patriots that if we don't take care of him, nothing else matters, and then other people may pop free. Ingram pops free in the run game, right? Then maybe he can hit Hollywood Brown over the top a few times. You know, Mark Andrews, the tight end, goes right on down the line. This is one of the most intriguing games in the regular season we're going to have, because of what you posited right in the beginning. What do you do with Lamar Jackson? He's come along that far where he's not just a runner, he's a much better thrower, but boy, oh boy, they have a full quarterback run game arsenal as well. It's a lot to prepare for in 1 week.
And I think that we can say that the Vikings are probably breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief, knowing that the Chiefs aren't in a rush to bring Patrick Mahomes back. I know you're covering that game this week,
yeah,
but when you look at the way the AFC West is shaking out, the Raiders take on the Lions. If they win, they move to 4-4. If the Chiefs struggle with the Vikings, they're going to be at 5-4. Does that then put pressure on the Chiefs to bring Mahomes back? I know there's been a lot of talk, like congratulations on having loose tendons, I guess. So the dislocation of the knee was not as bad as it was before.
Yeah.
But there's a lot on the line for the Chiefs here, even though they got off to a big time start.
Yeah, you're right about that. What you have to do as an organization, and I think the Chiefs will do this, is remember the bigger picture.
Okay.
And the bigger picture is Patrick Mahomes all the way through. Not just this season, but down the line. Remember how Washington brought back RG3 and played him in the playoffs?
Yes.
Was he ever the same?
No, he was not.
No. So I'm not saying apples to apples, but you have to be really careful with young talents. I mean, you know, I remember reading as a kid about a great baseball pitcher named Dizzy Dean who caught a line drive on his foot. It turned out he had a fractured right toe, pitched with an oversized shoe, threw off his mechanics, threw his arm out, was never the same guy. Those are things you have to keep considering, even though, yeah, we're in a playoff race. Yeah, we're trying to win games. Bigger picture with that talent, I think that they will do that a lot better than maybe the Jets have done with Kelechi Osemele and trying to figure out what the right thing to do is. So, yeah, if he's not ready to go, he won't be out there.
Right.
But here's the thing. The Raiders, yes, they could very well be thundering down their necks, but Kansas City feels very confident. They've already beat the Raiders once. They feel like they'll do it again. And remember, they beat them on the road. They get them at home next time, even though Kansas City's lost three at home, which is very strange to say. They feel like they're a better team no matter who plays quarterback. I don't think they're going to panic, even if it gets to 5-4 and 4-4. And don't be surprised at all if Detroit goes out there and beats them anyway. So I just don't see panic coming out of Kansas City. I see caution. And at the same time, they feel like they're good enough to be in most games with Matt Moore. But obviously, to win a Super Bowl, they need a full Patrick Mahomes.
With Charles Davis of Fox Sports, I don't know if you were watching the pregame show before last night's game, Charles, but Fox did a feature on Ronnie Lott, the great legendary 49ers mm-hmm. safety, and how he dislocated quite badly a pinky finger in a game in the middle of yeah. his career and was given two options: surgery to repair it and you're out for an extended period of time, or we can amputate the tip and you can play again next week. And he chose the latter. So Ronnie Lott now yeah. lives with 9.5 fingers, and it's become a story yeah. of lore. When you played, what's the worst injury you had, or what was the most significant injury that you saw a teammate gut out and play through?
Well, I saw teammates gut out and play through a number of different injuries. I'll just keep it to myself so I don't speak for someone else. Look, nothing as close to do I take a finger or not. and Ronnie Lott's trade-off was take part of that finger, and just add a Super Bowl ring, and I'll call it square. And that's pretty much what he did. So that would be typical Ronnie. I remember seeing him after one game. I think they won the NFC Championship, and they caught him in the game, in the locker room, addressing the team, and he said, "Hey, congratulations, guys! Great win. I know that we'll focus on the Super Bowl down the road, but tonight we are headache bound." Meaning they were getting ready to party.
Yes.
And so that's kind of where Ronnie was, and I can still feel the concussive hits from him. I fractured a fibula in a game against Washington State my sophomore year at Tennessee, first quarter of the game. And it's a non-weight bearing bone where I did it. It was up high, not low. So we didn't know it was actually fractured. Our team doctors examined it, blah, 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 the whole thing. They thought it was a bad bruise. So I was lucky enough to gut it out and play the entire game, but I didn't know it was fractured. I really think a lot of that stuff is mental, that if you don't know something, then you don't go there in your mind. I said, "Oh, bad bruise. Okay, keep hobbling. We can go. And then we found it was fractured. I missed a couple of games later. The funny part of the postscript of that story is that when I came back after 2 weeks out, our team trainer told my coach that I could only play 20 plays the next game. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even start the next game. And the first series of the game, they end up running a toss sweep. Guy goes downfield. He goes like 80 yards for a touchdown. And in the middle of him running, I was grabbed by my coach and said, "You're going in next series." And I never came out. I played like 70 plays that day. So much for the old 20 plays deal. I think nowadays people are a little more cautious about things. But back then, We were a little looser about how we administered what we were talking about.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like the medical staff they weren't as empowered as they are. People aren't really looking at sports science maybe back in the day as much.
Well, I think a part of what we have now, Ashley, I think that we truly have better independence between the teams and the doctors.
Yeah.
Because I think the team doctors, if you remember back in the day, they were all wearing team gear. If you look on the sideline, they would be in a hat and in a shirt, and they all had the team logo on it. So there's no question who they were working for and what they were looking out for. So if the idea they really needed a guy on the field and the coach kind of said, "I really need him," they might clear you then. I think nowadays, much more independence, and we allow the doctors and the trainers to do their jobs.
Always great, Charles. Thank you for this. Enjoy Kansas City, and we'll do it again next Friday morning at 7 o'clock.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Take care of yourselves.
You too.
Thanks, Charles.
Charles Davis, NFL analyst for Fox Sports. He'll be on the Vikings and Kansas City game in KC on Sunday.
I once hosted a radio show for about 3 months with a herniated disc in my back, Ashley. Does that impress you?
No.
Okay.
It does not.
Not at all?
No, not really. Although
good for you.
I will say that, you know, back pain is no joke.
It is awful.
And unless you have had it, you don't really understand. I remember I used to scoff at people like, "Oh, I have a migraine. It's debilitating." Blah, 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 blah. And then I got my first headache when I was in my mid to late 20s. And I was just like, holy heck, something's worse than this. And it was just a regular headache situation. So Godspeed to everyone. When's National Migraine Awareness Day? Is what I need to know, because I will be celebrating that.
There will be.
I'll be headache bound celebrating National Headache Awareness Day.
There will be lots of Instagram stories on that day. Our good friend Steve Rapp of Inside the Lines, which you can hear right here Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I feel like when I say Sunday mornings and then put a.m. after the 10 o'clock, it's kind of redundant. Sunday morning at 10, Inside the Lines, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning, Mr. Rapp. Always good to chat. Washington at Buffalo. The Bills coming off a home loss to Philadelphia. They should bounce back. The question is, do they cover the spread?
I just hope I can do as well as Mr. Russick, who filled in for me last week, and I hear has been chirping about going 3-0.
So,
lots of notifications on Twitter, yes.
Yes, he's not quiet about it, that's for sure. He's definitely not quiet. Well, you know, the old blind squirrel will find an acorn every now and again, right? So there you go.
Well, I hope you find an acorn this week, sir.
I'm hoping. I needed it. I was so bad the week before I left, I had to get out of town. But here we go. Bills open 10.5-point favorite in Sports Interaction. This one's going to set up as pros versus Joes, guys. Public tickets on the Bills. Line moves towards the Redskins, sitting at 10 now. Yes, the Redskins may be one of the worst teams in the league, but as far as I'm concerned, the Bills' offense shouldn't be double digits over anyone. Washington has named a starter, but whether it's Keenum or Haskins, the running game has improved under Bill Callahan since he took over. Bill showed last week they can be run against. The Eagles rushed for 218 yards against them. Along with Washington, the Jets, Dolphins, and Bengals complete the NFL superfecta of crap. Bills have played them all. They beat the Jets by one as a small week one dog. They failed to cover against either of the other two. The most impressive part of their resume so far is hanging with the Patriots at home before ultimately losing. And I'm going to bet the numbers here, not the teams. Bills are not a team I'm laying double digits with. I'm going to take Washington plus 10.
Okay, so let's move on to Tampa Bay at Seattle. This one should be easy pickings for the Seahawks at home, huh?
You would think so, actually, and I wish they were all easy pickings because we'd be a lot richer. But sports reaction for this one, Seahawks 6.5-point favorite at home. Public money has been on the dog, pushing this one now down through 6, now 5.5, and I'm going to disagree with the public dog, which, guys, more times than none, that is a good strategy on its own. But I'm going to make a case for the Seahawks, really against the Bucks in this spot. This is a road-weary Tampa team playing its fifth consecutive road game, which includes a trip to England, now ends up with a trip across country. That's an exhausting trek for any team to take. Seattle under Pete Carroll, they're 46-33-3 against the spread at home. They average 7.5 more points a game than their opponents. They're number 3 in points allowed per games at home in that stretch. Bucks on defense can stop the run. They do rank number 1 in that category, but they rank 25th against the pass. Russell Wilson's having an MVP year. Tampa doesn't have the ability to handle DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And, of course, we're going to always expect that late last-minute gift from Jameis Winston in case we're close to our number. I'm going to lay the 5.5, laying a favorite here for a change.
Now, New England undefeated going into Baltimore 5-2. You're getting the best D in the league against maybe the most dynamic quarterback in the league in Lamar Jackson. Who do you have here?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm going to read off some quarterbacks for you that New England has faced, so I'm not so sure. I mean, the defense looks great, but not as great as it seems. Patriots open a 4-point favorite, and this is the day after Halloween, so I'm going to tell you a scary story. The pros, the public, and I are on the dog against New England Patriots, and what could go wrong with that? And here they go. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Luke Falk, Josh Allen, Daniel Jones, Case Keenum, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. Not a future Hall of Famer in that group.
I'm just hearing the names of studs when you read those.
Nah, I don't think so.
Duds.
Not a murderer's row, Ashley. It's not a murderer's row of quarterbacks. That's who the Patriots have faced this season, along with facing the easiest schedule in the league. We can debate that system that allows that to happen. But anyways, that's what we got. New England showed they could be vulnerable to the run last week. Cleveland put up yards. Nick Chubb ran free quite a bit. Baltimore's running game is explosive. Their offensive line better than the Browns. Lamar Jackson's averaging 82.5 yards rushing a game. The Ravens acquired Marcus Peters to shore up the defense. Pat's offense, they ask me, they've been pedestrian at best of late. Belichick could work his genius. He seems to always do so when he's doubted by the betting public. He likes to take it personally, I think. But this is by far the toughest team they face. They have to lay points in a tough place to play with a team coming off a bye. Listen, I missed that New England for the last 20-something years, laying the favorite. I'm going to go against them again. It's worked well, never. But anyways, taking plus 3.
I'm with you, Steve. I'll even hot take it even further. Baltimore's going to win on Sunday night.
I don't disagree with you, Scott, at all. I think that New England's that schedule, I don't know how it works out that they have the easiest schedule in the league, the team that's won the Super Bowl 6 times in the last 7 years, whatever it is. It's ridiculous. But we'll see what happens.
We'll be listening Sunday morning, 10 o'clock, Inside the Lines. Thanks, Steve. Steve Rapp, betting analyst, Inside the Lines, 10 o'clock, Sunday morning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll get to our Champions of Rec League contest, and we'll tee up the Leafs and Flyers. No excuses for the boys in blue and white tomorrow night. That's next.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Your team could be playing in a game called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup. If your team was nominated, this is your last week, which means today would be the last day to tune in to hear if we announce it. You can also enter online for a chance to be the wild card team. David Roberts from Thornhill nominated and captains the team Rob's Renegades. So if you're on the team Rob's Renegades, you have 590 seconds from right now to call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590 on your cell to qualify for the voting round of this contest. Find all details at sportsnet.ca/590. Good luck to Rob's Renegades. Call in. Toronto Maple Leafs, Philadelphia Flyers, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Saturday night game, hockey night in Canada on the road. The Leafs will be in Philadelphia later this afternoon, spend the night in the city of brotherly love, while the Flyers are not too far away, but traveling to New Jersey to play the Devils tonight. The Penguins thumped the Flyers 7-1 a couple of nights ago, so this will be a 3-4 with some travel on a back-to-back for Philadelphia. We've been talking, Ziggy, about the Leafs and this scenario often enough this season. The shoe is on the other foot tomorrow night. The Leafs have been off since Tuesday, played pretty well, even though they didn't win against Washington. 2 points tomorrow night. Book it, right?
Well, one thing they haven't done is complain about the schedule, but let's be honest.
We have.
Well, they haven't, which is the important part. When you get four back-to-backs right off the bat, it is really tough. And the thing about it is that you don't get practice time. And something that does, and something that Austin Matthews brought up, the fact that you can't get chemistry with your team, they don't feel like they're gelled together as a group. That is one of the reasons. When you just come out and just fire away games to start off the season, you don't get that. You don't get the road trip. You don't get the dinners at home. You don't get to go out and do things with guys away from the rink. And sometimes that will spill into the room and onto the ice. So now they finally get Philly in a tough situation this week. You get 3-4. You get them on the second half of a back-to-back. That's what's important now. Now they get to enjoy what teams have had against them so far this season.
Well, they need to step up and perform. I mean, I don't know if I need to offer up a more complicated opinion or take than that. The calendar has flipped here. Freddie has been good at times, not so great at other times. Certainly, his first two Octobers as a Leaf were meh. He was better in October last year.
Yeah, he was good.
I'm 50-50 at best on him through October now, this season. So I would argue three of his four Octobers in Toronto haven't been great. Calendar flips. He steps up. This team's got to start having results because they've been, I mean, they're effectively a 500 team here through the first 14 games of the season.
Well, when you talk about all the back-to-backs that Toronto have had, it's a little bit difficult for me to deduce exactly what Frederik Andersen could have done, would have done, should have done. Like, I think this year is a little bit different in the fact that he's been, like, on and off, on and off. So he's been okay. He's had some games where you're like, yes, vintage Freddie, that's what we need if the Leafs are going to make any kind of dent in the postseason. Then he's had games you're like, oh, a little bit leaky. But again, you attribute it to having a shaky October, and that's classic Freddie. It's okay. It's forgiven once he steps up his game going forward in November. But with this Leafs team, we haven't yet seen a game where I've sat back and been like, yeah, that's a strong 60-minute front-to-back nice performance. We've had games where they've had slow starts and you're like, you guys have got to get that under control. We've had games where they've outscored their issues and it's nice, but it's not sustainable. We've had games where they're playing from behind. We've had games where they've given up leads. And I understand that there's ebbs and flows to every hockey game. Not everything is going to be wire-to-wire victories, but a game against a team like Philadelphia, it's a perfect opportunity to have one of those games, to come out of the gates absolutely firing on all cylinders and really make a mark and kind of shut down the scuttlebutt that's surrounding your team, with Ovechkin making his comments, with people speculating that Babcock probably loves it a little bit, that someone else who's held in very high regard around the league is essentially saying the message that you would imagine is at least in the same vein as the coaching staff. I don't necessarily know if they're calling their players selfish in the locker room, but there's definitely a message of continuity and playing together. One man can't solve everyone's problems. But the biggest thing for me is, who's going to fight Chris Stewart? No, and it's kind of funny, but who's going to fight Chris Stewart on Saturday? Because if anything happens, he's a heavyweight. So he can have his pick of anyone on this Leafs team to probably demolish. So what's going to be the response for that? Because this is the one thing that I can see every single person who calls for more truculence, more grit, more grime, more mixing it up on this Leafs team. It's going to be a problem when Chris Stewart knocks someone out if it comes to that. And then that conversation is just going to get revved up to 100.
Well, you saw Gauthier go after Tom Wilson last game. And though I do love it, he's not going to fight Tom Wilson. Let's be honest. And they don't have anybody that's going to fight a Chris Stewart or Ryan Reeves. They just don't have that in the lineup. Even a Ty Domi, Max Domi, they don't have a guy like that. But it's one of those things where when you do have that guy in your lineup, it's the team gets to play a little bit tougher. The guys that aren't tough, they just have a little bit more edge to them, right?
Oh, they get big brother syndrome. Like, well, my brother's going to kick your ass.
And a team that really plays like that is the Boston Bruins. When you have a guy like Char in the back that can just demolish anybody, everybody just, they can play with a little bit more edge. Pasternak trying to bat a puck out of the air and he hits Muzzin in the head and just laughs at him. You don't have that if you don't have a team that's a little bit tough, a guy like Marchand, a guy like Chara. And this Philly team, it's the same kind of thing. When you got a guy like Stewie on that team, everybody just plays a little bit tougher. But back to the point you make, and I like that, about when have they played well this year? And it's one of those things where I understand the game against Washington wasn't great, but I saw a lot more from them that we haven't seen all year. And say what you want, say this was a team stepping up, maybe it's something Babcock said, but let's be honest, Alexander Ovechkin's comments were the reason behind it. The reason behind how they changed their game. They came out more intense. They play with a little bit more edge. They're in the fight. Gauthier's grabbing guys. And that's what I like.
Well, a peer in the league, one of the top players, called him out.
But the problem with that is, though, you can't confuse, and I'm not saying that you are, but as a team, they can't confuse retaliatory penalties with playing with grit and with stepping up to the plate, right? You have to be able to do things in a different way. So they took a lot of penalties. Granted, they were on the power play a ton as well against Washington in that game. But you do have to overcome at least one thing every game. Ziggy, don't you want to see that? It's like, okay, this game, if they're going to score an early goal, your opponents, if Philly's going to get on the board early, maybe don't head to the box so much for the Leafs. If you're going to be in the penalty box for chippy stuff, tripping, whatever, hooking, then come out early and play with a lead and maybe protect that lead, right? It just seems like every single thing is a snowball almost. It's just like it's everything every game as opposed to one thing.
Well, every coach hates penalties, but the players on the bench hate it even more. Some guys that aren't on the penalty kill or don't get special teams time, they're the ones that suffer. I mean, I know Jason Spezza's on the power second unit, but he doesn't get on the ice a lot. And there's a lot of penalties. That third line really suffers at times. The fourth line doesn't get out there
Austin,
as much.
Austin, if you're taking penalties, he's on the bench for.
He's another guy that just gets iced on the bench. So that's one issue. And it depends what penalties you actually do take. When they're roughing and you're going in the crease and you're taking penalties where you're being aggressive, you can live with those. The ones you can't live are the tripping, the hookings, the slashings, the things that don't do anything in the game.
The tripping, the hooking, the slashing,
tripping, hooking, slashing.
We got to get the Babcock trance back on at some point. A former Blue Jay hits the free agency market. We will discuss that before the end of the show. Elliot Friedman at the top of the hour, and the phone lines are open right now, 416-870-0590. This is my favorite game that we play. I take it personally. If you're my caller, I take it personally if we don't win this together. We will play Guess Who for your opportunity to see the Mississauga Steelheads in action on November 15th, and for your last chance to get into the draw, which we will make next hour, for a pair of Leafs Kings tickets on Tuesday. Guess Who next.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Leadoff presents Guess Who?
All right, this is for your chance to win two tickets to see the Steelheads, Mississauga Steelheads in action on November 15th, and to enter the draw for the final time, and we'll make that draw in just a few minutes, for a pair of tickets to see the Leafs and Kings on Tuesday night down at Scotiabank Arena. We're playing Guess Who. Some rules have changed here. We're going from a 30-second clock to a 45-second clock. If you don't know the answer based on the clues either Ashley or I give, just say next and we'll move on, come back to it later. We do have a tiebreak question in case there is a tie at the end. So, two callers. Today's topics are Raptors all-time greats. Ashley will be your tour guide for that one. I've got current NFL quarterbacks. Our first contender is Nick in Burlington. Good morning, Nick. Which topic would you like?
Let's do the NFL quarterbacks.
Okay. Off to a tough start, Nick.
Friday. Come on, give me a break. Okay.
Nick, I take this really personally. If you don't win, I'll cry. So I because it'll mean my clues sucked. All right, okay. Here we go. In 3, 2, and 1. Considered the greatest of all time, New England Patriots, Bill Belichick and...
Tom Brady.
Underperforming former Heisman Trophy winner, quarterback for the Browns.
Mayhew.
Okay, we'll move on from that one. Looks like Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite has a great mustache. Took over for Nick Foles in Jacksonville.
That would be a pass.
Married to Ciara?
Yeah, Ciara.
Seattle Seahawks quarterback.
Russell Wilson.
49ers quarterback. He's 8-0 this season, 16-2 all-time as a starter.
Oh, geez. Yeah, he used to be with the Patriots. I'll pass for now.
Okay, Packers quarterback, one of the all-time greats,
Aaron
king of the Hail Mary. There you go.
All right. Seen better, seen worse, Nick. That's the honest assessment, to be honest with you. Baker Mayfield is who you were looking for, buddy.
How many did we get?
Three. Right? Three. Okay. So George in Stouffville is up next. Hi, George.
Hello.
All right. Just a reminder, we're doing Raptors greats. You have 45 seconds. You only need four names. The clock starts now. He was traded away for Kawhi Leonard last year.
DeMar DeRozan.
He won the dunk contest in 2000. He plays for the Hawks now. He's the oldest player.
Carter.
Yep.
Carter.
Boardman gets paid. Fun guy. The claw.
Kawhi Leonard.
His nickname is Mighty Mouse. Kyle Lowry wore his jersey to the championship parade.
Sotomayor.
Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah, buddy. Like clockwork, George. We don't even need the rest of the time, baby.
George in Stouffville, congratulations. I take that one a little less personally because I don't think I was bad at it. Sometimes I'm bad at it.
I was getting upset because when you're just like quarterback for this team, quarterback for this team, that's so cheap. Like,
that's the numbers when you say what number was the guy.
Yeah, same. That's all right. You lost anyway.
Okay.
Sucker.
Well, George in Stouffville wins tickets to see the Steelheads in Mississauga November 15th. It is into the draw, which we'll make, I think, in the next 10 minutes or so for the opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host the Kings on Tuesday night. Jim Paschke is the television play-by-play voice of the Milwaukee Bucks. Raps at Bucks. First time those two teams see each other since last year's Eastern Conference Final. He'll be along at 8:30. Elliot Friedman is with us next.
Get an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get... Wow! For only at Pizza Pizza.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley.
Packy Manny Power.
Come on, try getting it out.
Packy Manny out.
That's his name forever now.
Ziggy.
Would you like a vitamin? B12? Eating primrose oil? Willow bark? Magnesium?
And Scotty Mack.
You know, the biggest thing that I see is the smile on his face. It's every day. He's able to handle success. He's able to handle setbacks.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
some would say the latter more than the former there. No.
What's your favorite phrase today?
The latter more than the former. Have I leaned on that?
You've used it two or three times.
Today?
Oh, yeah, buddy. I'm an active listener. We'll add it to the list of your next life coaching session.
I think I've done it some this week. I have no recollection. I'm now worried that I've done that twice already prior to just doing it now, and I have no recollection of it.
Okay.
Maybe that's...
It's not the worst thing in the world.
I mean, maybe that's what happens when you hit 40. You don't remember things anymore.
The only problem with former and latter and using that is that if the latter is an expansive thought, no one really remembers the former. So you're like, I hope they pick latter because I don't remember what former was.
This is some hardcore analysis of former
anyway,
latter.
Sorry. I'm working with Bob Babinski. I'm his associate. Yeah. But Bob Babinski, talent coach here at Sportsnet.
Yeah, he's the talent coach here at Sportsnet. So you are the voice of Bob's words.
Babette Babinski, please. And thank you.
Yeah. It's just like Bob's passive aggressive way of getting through to me is to speak through you.
Exactly.
Ashley, deliver messages on the air that will give him a variety of different complexes and neuroses.
Really shake him up.
All right, Elliot Friedman. Without further ado, our NHL insider from Sportsnet, brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora, the author of 31 Thoughts and the co-host of the 31 Thoughts, the podcast, alongside Jeff Merrick. Elliot, I mean, geez, the Leafs haven't played since Tuesday. We've had a full 72 hours to kind of unwind and not panic about anything. But what about tomorrow night on Hockey Night in Canada when it will be Philadelphia playing on a back-to-back with travel, when it will be Philadelphia playing a third game in four nights, when it will be Philadelphia potentially starting their backup goaltender, or not if they go with their backup in the front end of a back-to-back situation. We'll see how it all plays out. The Leafs, conversation points, excuses, however it is you want to describe them, the roles are flipped. They don't exist heading into tomorrow night's game, do they?
Oh, my God, that idiot Vigneault, I can't believe he started this guy. Yes, it is going to be a little different. There's no question about that. So, and you know what? That Philly team, if you've been paying attention to them all week, they're really going through it. They got embarrassed by Pittsburgh the other night. They've got some situations there where, you know, they've got a lot of talented young guys who I don't know if they were really expecting to carry the mail this year. And you can sense they're not really happy with a couple of their veterans. Yes, it's sort of like bizarro Leaf matchup tomorrow night on Hockey Night in Canada.
Now, when you look at this Leafs team right now, and you got maybe Tavares coming back in the lineup, can this team really play well? Can they maintain what they're supposed to be doing without big guys out of the lineup? Most teams, you lose a centerman, your top centerman or your top D or your starting goaltender, and everything just kind of falls apart. But with Tavares out, I think they kind of looked okay.
I thought they played pretty hard against Washington the other night. I know they lost, but you know, I liked the way they played. I thought they competed pretty hard. I mean, Mike, you know, this league, that happens to you. I mean, good teams find a way through it. Everybody gets injuries. You know, there's a reason some teams carry 8D, and they have one of the, even though this month has been kind of a different setup for them in terms of the amount of back-to-backs, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for the Toronto Maple Leafs with things like their travel schedule and the wear and tear it puts on their players. They have one of the better ones around. I mean, I know the West teams in particular roll their eyes when people talk about how difficult the schedule is for someone like Toronto. I mean, that's the way this league is. Guys are going to get hurt. You know, it's like my grandmother's old line, you plan, God laughs. Weird things happen to you, and you just have to battle your way through it. You know, I think there's a chance, like, with the amount of days off this week, I've kind of been looking back over some of the coverage we've had with Toronto this month. I mean, we've been in full-on hysteria very quickly this season. And if I was them, I'd be using that as, you know, a way to say, hey, guys, the urgency is ramped up, and we have to respond to it. And I just don't think there's any other way. There's no point in complaining about it. There's no point. You just have to put your head down and work, and that's what this team has to do.
Now, Ovechkin's comments, I know it's been a couple days, but I saw a little bit of a different team when they played against Washington.
I agree.
And, yeah, and I think it's, I mean, Ovechkin didn't call them out, but his comments were the reason or the motivation for that. Can they kind of keep that game going, or is that just, hey, I got called out by another guy and it's in the league, and I'm going to respond for the night?
You know, Mike, I really think that this whole Ovechkin thing has been completely overblown. You know, I was standing there when he said it. I was listening to him. And, I got to tell you, I think the reaction to this has been way, 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 way over the top. Like, he made one joke in that scrum about Dale Hunter. Mm-hmm. How can Austin Matthews improve defensively? It was called Dale Hunter. And, you know, Ovi and Dale Hunter, they're not on each other's Christmas card list, put it that way. But, you know, like, the thing about that answer was, someone asked him a question, and he just gave an answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at Washington, you know, the history of that team, they changed the way they played. They changed their identity. Some of it was because of, you know, the fact that they weren't winning. Some of that was because of the personnel they got. Tom Wilson became a big part of that team. TJ Oshie became a big part of that team. I mean, those are guys who, you know, wear you down and grind you down. And I think that was the reason, a big reason as much as anything else. But the thing about Ovechkin is he was asked a question, he gave an answer. And because English is not his first language, if you've ever dealt with him over the years, he answers questions very bluntly because he didn't grow up speaking English like we all did. So I don't think he was taking a shot at the Maple Leafs. I think he was answering a question. And I've been amazed at how everybody's handled it this week. And it's true. I mean, the Capitals did change the way they played. So I don't know. I thought the Leafs played really well in that game. I thought they competed. I thought they battled. I mean, you know, when Muzzin goes down, you know, things have a chance to go really sideways for them because of what he represents on that team. I just, you know, I thought they competed pretty hard. And if they play like that most of the time, I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, because all that matters is that when teams come into town or whether the Leafs are going into opponents' barns is that the opponent is still weary. Last year, the biggest narrative and a question that every visiting team was getting asked when they're in town, how scary is Toronto's forward depth? How scary is their center depth? And it was something that every team was like, yeah, you really have to be cautious. You really have to be cognizant of. And just because Ovechkin made these comments about them potentially not playing together, it doesn't mean that they're any less scary. It doesn't mean that teams take them any less lightly because they're playing a little off kilter so far this season.
Well, I think that's true. And I think the other thing, too, is that, Ashley, is that, you know, Toronto's not getting too many teams' worst games.
Right.
You know, if you look at Washington, they came in here. They had that big comeback the other night in Vancouver last Friday. They stayed in Vancouver on Saturday. They were supposed to fly out Sunday, and they had a delay. And they didn't land in Toronto until 3 a.m. Monday. They could have given themselves the day off. They didn't. They skated. And, you know, I was around someone who, you know, we're making a joke, you know, take the Leafs on Tuesday night because of Washington's terrible travel schedule. And, you know, one of the Capitals said, oh, no, we like playing here. And Obi loves playing here. And, you know, Toronto gets everybody's best game. And part of it is because they're Toronto. And part of it because a lot of guys like playing here. They have family here. But I also think, too, like the hype that gets put around them and their talented players, I think guys just love competing against that. And I think, you know, and I think that's a good thing for the Maple Leafs. You're not going to get too many easy games this year. And I think that can, if you use that the right way, it can toughen you. It can make you better. I mean, I don't know about you guys. You know, we're what, like, today's the second month of the season. It feels like the Leafs have been playing for 6 months already.
It does, because it's a Marner thing, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like it's like, you know, actually I was surprised by Marner's quote the other day. I mean, when, you know, he's got to be a driver. He can't be worrying about who his line mates are. He's got to be a driver.
Well, Elliot, I've likened it to, as managers in baseball will tell you, if you're not hitting, if you have no offense, you're not getting anybody on base, you're not pressuring the opposing pitchers in any way, you look lifeless. The way this sport is played now, so little hitting, so little stuff after the whistle, at least relative to what we grew up with. I don't want to sound like old man yelling at cloud, but, I mean, it's just the way that it is. When the Leafs are kind of scoring here and there, but otherwise lots of neutral zone play, a little lax coming back, one on threes like Oshie's Ovechkin's thing, the game tying goal there the other night against Washington. When you see that stuff, it appears, whether it is or it isn't happening, it appears like they are sluggish, like they are indifferent at times. That is what is maddening. The game isn't the same.
I don't disagree with you, Scott. I think it's true. I mean, they have lapses. There's no question about that. They're, you know, I think this whole season in a lot of ways for them, like, it's like Tampa, they're not playing great right now, and people are all over them. And, you know, like after what happened last year, it's Toronto and Tampa are teams where the regular season almost doesn't matter because they're not going to get judged on that. They're going to be judged later. But I think this whole season has to be about attention to detail for them. I completely agree with you, Scott. And, you know, because the NHL is such a quieter place and Ziga Manis retired and nobody's, you know, running people after the whistle like he always used to, that, you know, I do agree. Like, the playoffs, you know, we talk about the difference between the regular season and the playoffs, okay? People say it's the referee. I don't believe that. I think it's the players. I mean, yes, I think the referees try to let players play a bit more, but the difference between what players will do, especially to each other in the regular season and the playoffs, is enormous. And the hate is always there in the playoffs. The hate is not there as much during the regular season. Like, I don't know how much you watched those two games last night, but those were unbelievable games. Nashville, Calgary, and Vegas, Montreal, they were great games, but there wasn't a ton of hate. So you either have to manufacture hate or you have to find something else to, you know, say, okay, this is what's going to get us through the year. And I think for a lot of teams now, it's the skill. I mean, some of the goals last night were, I mean, Tkachuk in particular were incredible. But I think for Toronto, yes, you've got the skill. But I think this year is about paying attention to detail. Because you're right, Scott, there are moments in Toronto games where you look and just say, like, how did that just happen? And then you watch the replay and you say, oh, that can't happen. So their whole challenge has to be, all right, maybe that's happening in October, but we've got to make sure that it's not happening in April.
Now, what's the injury update on Muzzin, and why hasn't Riley
Charlie been... Charlie Horace, apparently.
And is he out? Is he... And why is...
And why do you say apparently like that? You sound a bit exasperated.
Well, I'm not exasperated. It's just that, like, I heard it's a Charlie Horse. And Babcock did say after the game on Tuesday it was a Charlie Horse. And it looks like that's what it is. I mean, the thing is, you know, if you guys have ever had a Charlie Horse, if you walked around giving each other dead legs in high school like some idiots, I know.
Definitely, though.
You know, it depends. Like, they can be over quick. They can just take a little bit longer. But it's definitely not the worst-case scenario, that's for sure. You know, the Riley thing, you know, he's not going to tell us. There's obviously something going on there. He's not practicing, although he has been taking the optional morning skates, Mike. So he's obviously got something, but, you know, he's not going to tell us what it is.
So are you thinking that Riley's, I guess, dip from last year, and to be fair, he came out like a bat out of hell. So I think when you have expectations that are really high and you don't live up to them, there's going to be even further disappointment, whether or not it's fair. And I think that kind of rings true to the Maple Leafs as a whole. But do you think that whatever the underlying issue could be with Riley is the biggest fact contributing to him not necessarily living up to expectations? Or would you point more to a new defensive partner and expecting to be, have chemistry with someone that you're still trying to get to know a little bit?
I think, Ashley, it's a little from column A and a little from column B. Like, obviously, he's not 100%. That's a factor. But B, you know, CC, it's not been an easy transition for him. He struggled. And I think that certainly affects the way Riley plays. So I think that's both. I mean, the one that surprised me more, Ashley, has been Barry.
Okay.
I thought Barry was going to have like 70 points this year because he's such a talented guy. And we've spent this whole conversation talking about how unbelievably skilled the Maple Leafs are. I don't know if it's because, well, I mean, one of the reasons is he's on the second power play. We have a deal with SportLogic, the analytics company, and I asked them this week to take a look at some of Barry's numbers, and the amount of time that he has the puck is the exact same as it was in Colorado last year, which really surprised me. But his power play time is down, so you know that's gonna change some of your thing. I think also, you know, he's playing more defensively with Muzzin in terms of where they start and what their role is. But I think both Riley and Barry for me this year, I see what it is. Riley's A, hurt, B, CC, just a different partner who's struggling. Barry, I think, being expected to play in a more defensive role, I think both of them have less production than a lot of us expected.
Is that kind of a disservice to Barry's skill set? And listen, I know the team comes first before anything, so if that's what you need, then that's the role that you have to fill. But not kind of letting him run free and explore those offensive opportunities, is that hindering him and maybe in his head on the defensive end as well, leading to some more struggles?
I would expect that it's probably a bigger adjustment than he expected.
Okay.
Because he's probably playing a role that he hasn't played as much and maybe didn't think that, you know, that was going to be what was going to be asked of him. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that's necessarily anything controversial. I just think that, you know, I'll tell you this. They're giving him a lot of responsibility, and if I was a player, I would want a lot of responsibility. But I would think that he's probably thinking to himself, you know what, this is a bit different than that's generally been asked of me, and maybe a bit different than what he expected. And, you know, I think we'll know that there's something really bothering Riley if he ever gets moved off of power play one and buries in that spot.
Good place to end it, Elliot. Thanks for this. We'll talk next week, and we'll be watching tomorrow night. No pressure.
It's a good thing I don't feel any pressure because I have very low expectations of myself. So that's good. Now, the other thing we should mention is tomorrow, the big game at 1 o'clock, Pittsburgh and Edmonton. We've been conscripted for that one. Amber, Berkey, and myself. But please, tune in anyway.
Would you dare risk dead-legging Berkey right before you guys go on air?
If I was in high school, I would. You've given me something to think about for 24 hours, Ashley.
Elliot, are you on the back end of the Hockey Night doubleheader tomorrow night?
Yeah, I've got a triple header.
Well, that's what I mean. Are you like the night games? We're going to be seeing you in the intermission at like midnight. Are you going to be nodding off? You getting a nap in at any point? This is a grind, my man.
You know, Scott, if you've seen me work, you think I'd be napping all the time.
Always good to catch up, pal. We'll be in touch. Elliot Friedman, NHL insider for Sportsnet. All right, we've been waiting for this. Taking your calls all week long on the VTech listener line at 416-413-4141. Looking for the best Toronto sports take that you have for us. So here is the VTech wake-up call of the week.
Hey, Leaf fans, this is Ryan in Toronto. I'm asking all Leaf fans to show a little patience right now. I know things haven't looked good to start the year, but you got to remember a couple things. We don't have our top line playing together yet. Two of our four top defensemen are new to the team. They're still figuring things out. And Freddie Anderson, he always plays better as the season goes along. So if we all just show some patience, this team's going to be rocking it come the postseason. I guarantee it.
Well, Ryan, I am choosing to panic. I will.
I guarantee. I love that. Everyone's guaranteeing things on the line. Thanks for your call, Ryan.
Mon, save that. If the Leafs win the cup, Ryan's getting credit, and we're dating it November the first.
Yes.
Ryan from Toronto, you have 590 seconds starting now to call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 to win the weekly prize pack from VTech and to qualify for the grand prize. Two tickets to the Raptors-Bucks on Friday, April 3rd. Two tickets to the Leafs and Habs on Saturday, April 4th. Two tickets to the Hockey Hall of Fame and a two-night stay at a hotel in downtown Toronto. The VTech wake-up call contest runs right until the end of the Leafs and Raptors seasons, so keep bringing your hot Toronto sports takes and you could be a winner with VTech and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jim Paschke is the play-by-play voice of Milwaukee Bucks TV broadcasts. The Raps go in there tomorrow night, the first of what will be four rematches of last year's Eastern Conference Final. I don't even know how you pronounce this. Did Milwaukeeites pay attention to the NBA Finals last year when they saw the Raptors win? Did they say, damn it, that could have been us? We were up 2-0 in the Eastern Final before Giannis melted and the Raptors took over. We'll get into all of that with Jim and preview the game next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So come on and jiggity-jack yourself before you wreck yourself.
All right, we are now drawing from all of this week's winners. I feel like there's a sound bite that's supposed to spinning a wheel or something. Mon shaking his head like, just shut up and announce it.
Tick, 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 tick.
Beautiful. Drum roll.
Just do it!
Okay, Mon!
Oh, my God! Don't yell at me on a Friday.
Only allowed to turn on your mic when we invite it.
Yeah.
George and Stouffville! You've got a... pair of tickets to see
Rise and shine.
The Leafs and Kings on Tuesday night down at Scotiabank Arena. That was unexpected, the pitch there with the George and all that. Anyway, good for you.
Thank you very much.
You're doing well, sweetie. That's when you life coach me.
Don't worry, sweetie. You're doing great.
Yeah, thank you. Raps and Bucks tomorrow night in Milwaukee. This will be the first time since those two teams played in the Eastern Conference Final last season that they will see each other. Milwaukee will be one of the top teams in the conference. The Raptors, they're off to a good start and are expected to be a going concern, although, as we know, don't need to repeat it, they are Kawhi-less. Jim Paschke calls Bucks games on TV, and he takes some time to join us this morning. Jim, it's great to catch up. Take us back to last June, where the Bucks had blown the 2-0 series lead to the Raptors, and then the city of Milwaukee, the Bucks, watched the Raptors take down the Warriors in 6 games. Were you paying significant attention in Milwaukee? And B, if so, was it a missed opportunity? Did it feel that way?
Do I have to, Scott?
Yes.
You do not okay. have a choice, Jim. Give us the 15-minute dissertation.
As the champions, we compel you.
Okay. I thought you might. Yes, we paid attention, of course. Paid great attention, and it was a situation where I think most people felt that the Bucks had a golden opportunity that they learned from and unfortunately weren't able to capitalize on, but that was a wonderful series. Obviously, I thought the Bucks would be difficult to beat 4 times. I did not ever consider that they could lose 4 straight games. So credit to Toronto and congratulations on the championship.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
We had nothing to do with it.
Speak for yourself. I contributed a lot of moral support, okay? Here's the question, though. Giannis and his performance in that series specifically, because if you look at the numbers, they weren't terrible. But he didn't necessarily elevate his game to the next level like you want superstars to do in those clutch moments. What was the sense at home about the way he was in that series?
I don't think anybody was down about the way he played at all. I think that you know, particularly in Game 6, I think the Bucks missed their last 11 three-pointers. You know, that shot was their bread and butter, if you will, during the season and most of the playoffs. And when that disappeared, they struggled a little bit. But, of course, you know, there's an awful lot to say about what Toronto did and what Kawhi did, more to me than what Giannis did not do. Mm-hmm. That's the way I would look at that. The Bucks learned some things. You know, focus is razor thin when you get that deep in the playoffs. If you veer at all, or if you are made to veer off your focus, you're in trouble. And I think that's what we saw. The team hadn't been to that point, obviously, so they learned a lot. And it was unfortunate because you don't often have home court all the way through the playoffs and have the MVP on your roster. And so the Bucks, they do realize that they had a great opportunity, but the best player in that series became a champion.
Now, this can go usually one of two ways for a team. When you lose a series like that where you're up early, sometimes it can make the team worse the next year. Sometimes it can make them better. How do you see this team kind of coming into the season?
Well, right now they have given up a couple of big leads in games, so that's a little bit concerning. We're trying to figure out, you know, what that's all about, because last year the Bucks were 25-0 when they led by 10 or more points in games, and they've already lost two of those situations. So to your point, you know, you have to be careful about how you come back. They have improved, however, collectively. The question I get most often is, how are you going to survive without Malcolm Brogdon? A great player, went to Indiana. But when you look at what the Bucks did collectively to replace him, I think they'll be just fine with Kyle Korver, Wesley Matthews, Robin Lopez. Dragan Bender also is new to the team, but the first three that I mentioned are solid contributors. And I think when this is over, the Bucks are going to be what the Bucks should be this year. We'll see.
With Jim Paschke, the Bucks play-by-play voice, and the Raptors go into Milwaukee for the first of four meetings with Milwaukee this season tomorrow night. This is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jim, I'm sure you're somewhat familiar, having been to Toronto a lot, with our perspective. We fear, and oftentimes those fears are turned into reality. We fear our inability to retain our free agents. It's the Canada thing. It's the cold weather thing, the customs stuff at the border, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Milwaukee is not one of the bigger markets in the U.S. Like Toronto, we have really, or you guys don't have great winters. Giannis in a year and a half, is there a prevailing opinion in the city of confidence that they can sign him to a max extension, or is there a gray cloud that follows the franchise around as fans wonder, is he really all in through the prime years of his career to be a Buck?
Well, that is the question of the season for everyone in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, and you know, that's a difficult one for me to answer. That's a personal decision that he has to make. He has obviously been upfront about saying that he likes the situation in Milwaukee. Things have been printed. The media is going to go at this a certain way over the course of this season. Teams around the league are obviously keeping an eye on him. And, you know, it's difficult for me to speak to free agency, but we'll have to wait and see. I do believe that Giannis has shown, and a lot of other players have actually shown, that the smaller markets, or quote, smaller markets, are no longer a big detriment. You can do just fine anywhere you choose to play, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's when you talk about players leaving Toronto, I don't know why you would want to leave Toronto except for the four reasons you mentioned. But it's I love Toronto, and, you know, my point there is you can't interpret what people think is a negative for them. So you just have to see. There are no negatives with Toronto unless you see a negative with Toronto. And same thing with every other city in the league. I don't think it's something – I think it's overplayed, actually. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, you can find – a detriment to any situation if you're actually looking. So with the Raptors headed to play you guys, what do you make of this current iteration of the team? Because with Kawhi gone, it does change the fabric of the group in a major way. And yes, you can say Kyle Lowry is the motor and the heart and soul, and Pascal Siakam took a big, big step. But, you know, without Kawhi, it's a lot of a different landscape.
It is, but you have a fine coach in Toronto. Nick Nurse did a wonderful job in the series against Milwaukee and all the way through the playoffs. I was extremely impressed with that. I think the front office has done a great job. I mean, you know, we have some former Bucks people that are involved with Toronto, Wayne Embry, Jack Sikma. You know, so I have a great deal of respect for what that organization has been able to do. They'll find answers. The Bucks have a very deep team, and we were just talking the other night about teams that could match that depth, and we feel like Toronto has the depth. I don't know. Right now I'm looking at some of the production from the bench, and it isn't great at this point, but Toronto's a team that can keep bringing players off the bench and compete with you, and we'll see how that plays out. The strength of Milwaukee, though, will probably be its bench when this is all said and done.
With Jim Paschke, Bucks TV play-by-play voice, and the Raptors are into Milwaukee tomorrow night. There were a lot of deck pieces that moved around the Eastern Conference. You know, Jimmy Butler moves from Philadelphia to Miami. Al Horford is now a Sixer, having left Boston. Kyrie is a Net, having left the Celtics. There's more and more I could go on about. Which teams impressed you the most, Jim, in the East in terms of their offseason maneuvering, and which teams do you think took a step back?
Well, you know, when you're a good team, as the Bucks are, you look at the teams that are as good or maybe a little better, and, you know, you have to look at Philadelphia. We think Toronto is still a prime competitor for the top spots in the Eastern Conference. Boston showed the Bucks that they were going to compete the other night. They came from 16 down to beat Milwaukee at home, and with some key players unavailable. So anything can happen. I think those are the three or four teams that are potentially going to be at the top of the bracket, but we'll have to see. Indiana is a team that I've been keeping my eye on. They could do some things this year, but, you know, there are surprises. There's always one team that comes out of nowhere and competes a little bit. The bottom of the Eastern bracket is going to be the most interesting. Who gets in? Is Miami going to be able to find a way into the top eight? I say yes. We saw them, and they beat Milwaukee. They're pretty good. They have some nice young talent there. So long season, too early to tell on that, but the top four teams, I think, are pretty obvious.
Great of you to do this, Jim. Thanks so much. We'll talk, I hope, again before the Raptors and Bucks play down the road.
Anytime. I always enjoy it. You talk about Toronto winners. It snowed in Milwaukee on Halloween, by the way. So,
oh, my goodness.
Oh, you hate to see it. You hate to see it.
Yeah, that's a little early.
We had rain. We had rain and high winds. We won't trade you. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Jim Paschke, Bucks TV play-by-play voice. It's pronounced Milwaukee.
Milwaukee? Oh, my goodness.
A former Blue Jay had his option declined and is now a free agent. Would you bring him back? If you don't know who that is, we'll name him next and debate.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So one, two, three, take my hand and come with me because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine.
So it is now Major League Baseball's offseason, which means that the free agent signing should start in about 4.5 months.
Look forward to that. Good Lord.
So they'll go down to the wire and we won't know how things are going to shake out till the middle of training camp.
Did you hear that the New York Yankees declined the option on Edwin Encarnacion's contract, gave him $4 million to go away, and therefore he is now a free agent? He will be 37 next year. He hit 34 home runs between the Mariners and Yankees this season, marking the eighth consecutive season that he has hit 30 or more home runs. He is still a plus offensive player in Major League Baseball, although around the same age in his final season in Toronto, Jose Bautista, like the Roadrunner, went off the cliff. So there is a fear that that is possible with anybody that age. Do you bring back a guy who effectively at this point is a designated hitter so that you have a power bat around those kids in the middle of your order? Understanding that if he's DHing more days than not, that's not a pliable position for you anymore, where you give guys like Vladdy rest days.
So I think this is twofold. Does he even have any interest in coming here and playing a part-time DH position? How many games does he want to get in? How much does he think he can contribute? Because there's two types of older veteran baseball players. The ones who know that their time is coming to an end, and the ones who think, whether it's true or not, that they should still be contributing at a high level. Troy Tulowitzki being a prime example here in Toronto. If I'm not starting, I don't want to play. But then secondary to that is, if you're trying to groom these young players and find out really what do I have in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and namely Rowdy Tellez at first base slash DH, why do you bring someone in who's going to lower the reps that those two guys are going to get in that position? So you mentioned it. Rest for Vladdy, maintenance days, he's just DHing. You're going to have those cut in half. And then Rowdy, what is he? Right? Like, we've seen glimpses where you're like, yeah, okay. Then you see things where you're like, yeah, not so much. So why would we cut into that time to discover him?
Well, I think Edwin could still play a little first base, which means Vladdy could come off his feet and DH. Now, we're also assuming, and that can make an ass out of you and me, but we're assuming that Vladdy's not going to be north of 270 pounds when he reports to Dunedin, which was the case last February. He's going to come in better shape and may not need the load management maintenance. But I think you could handle it that way. And I think that you lengthen your lineup. Like, you stick Encarnacion in there in the cleanup spot. And now you've got an on-base guy like Cavan, Bo Bichette at the top, Vladdy hitting three, Edwin four, and then you build it down. You push Randall Grichuk into a 6-7 spot, which I think he's far more accustomed or built better for. I think it helps having a veteran power bat, a stabilizer in that order. And Encarnacion, he doesn't have to be him, but he certainly could be that guy, and he loves his city.
It's fine when you bring in a veteran guy to bring leadership in the clubhouse, but you don't want to do it on years where I believe that you're a contender. So if this team is still building and you're still trying to work towards something, I'm fine bringing a guy in for leadership, but not when it's a young group where they're looking to actually contend for something this year, this following year. So that's kind of, I don't want to say that Patrick Marleau's the comparison, but something similar to that. Yeah, you don't do it, but in a situation like this with the Blue Jays, I don't think it's a bad idea.
I just, with Encarnacion, would not do more than 1 year. And people would say, well, what would you pay him? I really don't even care, because it's the term that matters, right? It would be a one-year deal, throw 17 to 20 at him if you were to bring him back. But then again, who knows, even with the relationship in the front office and the way it all went down after the 2016 season. Have a wonderful weekend. We are back Monday morning at 6 o'clock, and Good Show is next.
All righty. See you guys next week. Maybe.